Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, he's been on the show many times before, and I love to welcome him back as it's Halloween. I wanted to talk a little bit about his Nocturnal Creatures book, including bats. Welcome back to the show, Hugh Warwick.
Hey, Selena.
Great to have you back with us on Halloween. Happy Halloween.
Yes, I know. I'm in London at the moment, but I have to rush back to Oxford to prepare our house for the onslaught, because many years ago, I discovered that when people come to your door and say trick or treat, you say trick, and then you squirt them with a high velocity water pistol. The kids run away screaming, but they keep coming back. So that's kind of what I do.
We don't condone this on Talk Radio Europe, but if that's what you want to do, that's not a problem. Bless you, bless you. Well, your latest book, just out beginning of October, is called Five Nights Out, and apparently it's about all nocturnal creatures.
Not all of them. Just a few.
Just five. Is that right? Was five
just
nights
five.
Out?
Just five. Yeah, okay. I see what I did there.
I see what you did there, and I see the mistake I made as well. So I've got three of them: hedgehogs, bats, and owls. What are the other two then?
Moths and badgers. And it's just, I mean, it's five. I should explain, this book is particularly, it was a grant from the Book Council of Wales, specifically to encourage people who've sort of slipped away from reading, just to get back into it.
Hmm.
So it's displayed as a quick read. It's only a pound. And it's absolutely wonderful. I mean, it's only a pound on buying it on Kindle as well. So it's especially if you use Amazon, you just get it. It's probably costing them money. I really love this fact that people are buying it and they're buying two and they're giving a copy away and they're taking them to their local schools. And I mean, I've been peppering, eat the kids who will come to my door to get soaked have already received copies of Five Nights Out. So I am not that mean.
So that's your treat, is it, giving them a copy of your book? Bless. So is it about those five creatures, or, you know, is it facts? Is it history?
It's all natural history. And it basically starts with the fact that I began my ecological life inadvertently becoming a nocturnal ecologist because I was studying hedgehogs. And there is so much which goes on at night, which we tend to ignore, which we tend to forget. We shut the door, we draw the curtains, and then that's it. But actually, if you get the opportunity to spend time out at night, you let your eyes accommodate to the darkness, get used to it, 15 minutes and you'll be able to see remarkably well compared to what you did before. You begin to sensitize yourself to the smells around the place, the feeling of dampness. It's a very different sensory regime out there. And there's so much life which is specifically nocturnal. And some of it is absolutely amazing. And obviously some of it you don't get to see in the way that we would see the birds fluttering around in the gardens because it's nighttime. But there are other clues. You can hear the owls. You can use bat detectors to pick up the sound of the bats. You can watch them, see the moths in the morning when they've landed in a moth trap and then get released. And you know, there is lots of ways of beginning to sort of fall in love with the life which is out there at night. And I think we miss out on so much by sort of thinking wildlife stops when the curtains shut.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I also think, obviously, we've mentioned Halloween. People think about bats and people think about bats as being scary. But I love bats. They are the cutest creatures.
They are amazing. I mean, bats, okay, this was a fact which I did not know. Okay, which is the fastest flying animal?
I'm going to guess a bat.
Yeah, because you see, the fastest flying animal is a bat in level flight, faster than the fastest birds. Is a Brazilian free-tailed bat. Yes, a peregrine can stoop faster, but that's not flying. That's just falling gracefully. The bats we have here in this country, there are no, I know it's going to disappoint people in the United Kingdom and in Spain for that matter, there are no vampire bats. Oh. I'm really sorry. So, you know, here we go, getting ready for Halloween. There are no vampire bats. But even if there were, there's nothing to worry because they take tiny, tiny amounts of blood and they prefer cows. So really, you can relax. But they, as you said, they are enormously wonderful, fascinating animals. You know, the noise that they make, which we can't hear, because it's such a high frequency, and they use this to see, and they can see with such a fine detail. I mean, they are, you know, they catch flying insects in flight just because of the sound they're making, and that sound bounces back to their ears. But it is so loud. It's actually louder than the front row of a rock concert.
Oh, my goodness.
If bats shouted, as they do all the time, in a frequency we could hear, nighttime ecology would be hideous. You'd need to wear earplugs the entire time. It would be unbearable. But luckily, it's at a frequency we can't hear.
Is that what your bat detectors do?
Yes, they translate it down and obviously don't make it quite as loud. So they lower the frequency of the sound. So take it from something way, way above the highest treble you could imagine, bring it down to a sort of more of a baritone. And the noise they make, the frequency, the pattern of the noise they make tells you which species they are and what they're doing. It's an enormously fascinating way of discovering what's around you.
And presumably, dogs can hear them, even though humans can't.
You know, that is really annoying. Sorry, Selena.
I don't know.
Sorry, worse than that. I hadn't even thought to ask that question. You've ruined my day.
I'm sorry. You'll have to put an addendum to the book.
That is such a good question.
Well, yeah.
And I simply don't know the answer to it. I'm actually in London in the offices of the People's Trust for Endangered Species. Their next door neighbours, the Bat Conservation Trust. If it wasn't for the fact we were now on air, I would be nipping across the road to go and say hello to them because I need to know the answer. Oh. Wow. Oh, okay, I'm going to grumble about that.
Let me know. If you find out, do let me know. Please let me know. I've got another one for you, and I think you will know the answer to this. You know the saying, as blind as a bat? Are they blind?
They're not actually blind. They don't tend to use their eyes very much because of the fact that they're flying around at night. And they don't need to because they've got this amazing sonic detection system. You know, they're bouncing sound off everything. But yeah, they do have the capacity to see. And if you look at the fruit bats, for example, they'll fly out during the daytime. Yeah, they've all got the capacity to see. It was some very cruel experiments done to work out how bats manage to navigate at night, though. When you look back at, well, what is described as the Enlightenment, but they did things which one would suggest weren't very enlightened about, you know, injuring bats to find out what they needed to be able to fly and navigate. That's how they found out they didn't need their eyes, but they did need their ears. But yeah, they can see. But the main thing is they'll never get trapped in your hair because they are so brilliantly gifted at their way they can navigate. Your hair is always going to be a big obstacle and they'll just dart around it.
Yeah, clever. Why do they hang upside down? Is there a reason for that?
I think it's just the physics of it. I mean, okay, here was a question. This is one of the questions I had never thought of. But then when I went to a zoo with my kids, and I saw fruit bats hanging upside down, as they do. And then I saw one pull itself up and pull itself upright and hang on the other way around, and then went to the loo and then hung back upside down again. And it dawned on me, I'd never thought about this fact, that a bat hanging upside down going to the loo would essentially cover itself. And they don't. They turn themselves around. When they hang upside down, they don't have to hold on. That's the reason it works. The little claw which they hook on with, the work is to unhook. So it's not like us holding on to a bar.
Yeah.
It's just something which is it's a passive thing. So they can just hang there forever. So it's not like, yeah, so it's very easy then to take off. I mean, you just drop and you're flying and there it is. If you're the other way up, then you kind of got to jump and spring and all sorts. It's much, much more sensible.
If any of our listeners wanted to go out, maybe not tonight because it's Halloween, but wanted to go out and sort of check out bats or moths and bats and owls and badgers, is there a way of doing it, a safe way, so as not to upset the animals?
So one of the things is that, yeah, exactly right. How do you do it to not upset them? Because if you upset them, they won't be there. So when I was out looking for badgers, I went through all the old field craft techniques of it. You do a bit of work beforehand. You find out where the badger sets are. The badgers live underground in these amazingly complicated sets. You find a badger set, and then you find yourself a place where you can sit not too far away from it so you can see it. And you position yourself downwind of it so that the wind is blowing from the badger set to you so that your scent doesn't get picked up by the badgers. You don't smother yourself in perfume just before you go there because yeah, that'll put them off. You know, you keep very quiet and you get there whilst it's still light and you sit yourself down, ideally with something behind you so that you don't have a silhouette. And then you sit and you wait. And you wait, yeah, give yourself half an hour before sunset to settle yourself in place. And it's absolutely fascinating, just waiting, that crepuscular time. I do love that word,
crepuscular. Yeah,
that evening and dawn time,
yeah.
When the light is changing and you can, you know, you hear the birds and then suddenly you realize the birds have stopped singing because they've gone to bed. And then the owls start. And then you'll see the fluttering around becomes moths or bats. And then you sit and you wait and you hope for the badgers to emerge from the badger set. And it's, you know, I actually find this such a peaceful and meditative thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's worth doing a bit of research beforehand. I mean, you go and turn up and you're sort of sitting overlooking somebody's, you know, back garden. They may not like it. You know, find yourself somewhere wild. And the best thing to do is you'll spot somebody with binoculars. You'll spot somebody who's covered in mud and maybe smells a bit like a badger. And you'll just ask them, you know, where do you go to see wildlife? This is the great thing about it. People who love wildlife love talking about it. Case in point is here. And they love to share the idea. They love to give other people the opportunity to experience it too. Yeah. So find the people who live near you who are into wildlife.
Yeah.
And then just say, but where do you go to see X, Y, and Z? I mean, I, you know, there are some great places. I live in Oxford and there are some fantastic places like Whiteham Woods is amazing for badgers. But there are badger sets all over the place. There's some lovely places down by the river, which are great for bats, moths in the local urban wildlife, nature reserve near me. Hedgehogs, that's a bit, I'm unfortunate that my housing estate doesn't really have many hedgehogs. But you know, these animals are around. And the owls, you know, I lie in bed at night and I can hear the tawny owls. You know, that's the traditional noise of twit-twoo that the owls make? I love the fact that on the whole, that's two owls and it's the female going twit and the male is going who?
No.
And the female says twit. And I mean, I don't know what's going on there, but I kind of feel we can read something into it.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. Well, if you want to the listeners, if you want to learn more about hedgehogs, bats, owls, moths and badgers, then the book is called Five Nights Out, and it's by Hugh Warwick, who has written many nature books. You can find out more from his website, hughwarwick.com. Hugh, it's always an absolute pleasure to chat to you. Now go and find out about the dogs for me.
Yeah, they're completely. You've ruined my afternoon, but thanks.
Happy Halloween. Bye-bye.
Happy Halloween. Bye-bye now.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.